So, I'm going to talk about new electroweak states in plain sight. This is work done with my incredible postdoc, David Curtin, a great grad student at Stony Brook, Parit Jaiswal, who now moved to a postdoc at Florida State University. This is work that came out in June of this year, but more importantly, there was an update we did at the end of August that reflected all of the summer iCHEP results, which really kind of sets the stage for this, and I'll talk about some of the differences. So this is the title, and then the alternative title for this is, or how I learned to stop worrying and love standard model measurements, more particularly how I learned to stop worrying that there was no BSM physics and love standard model measurements. So, that one's good. So the outline of this talk is a fairy tale with consequences. So I'm going to try to convince you that there's experimental hints of something in the data right now at the LHC and many different independent confirmations of this hint of something. And then I'll describe new electroweak states that could explain this hint. And ironically, it's the one example of new physics that I know of at the LHC, which actually improves the fit to the data instead of just being excluded. So that's interesting from my perspective. But then again, as I said, I don't normally chase ambulances, and the ambulances I chase are normally the weird ones, so you can put that with a grain of salt. The consequences, though, are trying to understand the constraints on this type of model and new electroweak physics in general. And so this fairy tale of consequences, if you don't believe any of the stuff I'm talking about, of that there's a hint of new physics, or you don't like my new physics model, I'll talk about the constraints. And it's very interesting because the LHC, for the first time ever, starting up this summer, actually is able to probe the electroweak sector directly. I'm not talking about the Higgs, I'm talking about just electroweak gauge bosons, and for the first time it's setting new constraints beyond LEP, since the Tevatron was totally useless for the electroweak scale, basically, unfortunately. And then I'll end this talk with, if you don't believe any of this stuff, if you think this experimental hints of something is just the standard model, I'll go over standard model explanations. So, the starting point of this talk, since I am a BSM type person, is that you look at the exotics or the SUSE web pages on the Twikis for either Atlas or CMS, and they have all these beautiful plots where then they stack all of their searches for all these different simplified models, and they say, ha ha, there's nothing there, and this is the CMS picture. But of course, I kind of like to view this as like a troll view of the new physics, because all they're doing is taking random results, putting them together. There's nothing about correlation. I mean, this doesn't say anything. This is just they put all the things on one slide. But, of course, this is starting to worry everybody in the BSM community because, well, it's not just supersymmetry that has plots like this, exotics has plots like this, we're basically finding no breakdowns in the standard model anywhere we look. I mean, we hoped, okay, maybe there's some anomalies in the Higgs, but this is all very preliminary. So, what do you do at this point when you can't find any new physics? I mean, it's really worrisome. And the other version, if you're not a fan of rage faces, you can take the Where's the Beef commercial and you can say, where's the new physics, okay? What have we studied, what have we not studied, and where should we look for the new physics? Okay. So this is my personal view of importance to look for new physics. And ironically, if I had drawn this same cartoon with this axis of importance to look for, I almost would have flipped it entirely, okay? Because normally the baseline of what we've been doing for the last 20, 30 years or so in looking for physics beyond the standard model is we posit some model that's trying to explain something. We all care about the naturalness problem, or we want to solve flavor physics. Why do we have mixing angles? Why do we have baryogenesis? So you write down a model, you come up with your favorite new particles in that model, you search for it, and that's how you come up with these crazy troll plots where they just search and roll out everything. Well, everything's kind of been reversed now since we're actually with the LHC probing electroweak symmetry breaking directly. And since we finally have our first hint of a new particle, the Higgs, or Higgs-like, or you call it X, or whatever the heck you want to call it, we actually have a new hint of something. So clearly, the best place to test the standard model, then, are the things that couple most strongly to this new particle, in particular in electroweak gauge boson sectors in the top. Now, okay, dark matter's out there, we can think about it, but all this stuff from models and random stuff, I love random stuff, but it's probably not the biggest priority. We should really try to investigate these two other sectors that connect most strongly to the Higgs sector. And the experimentalists can summarize these things nicely. So this comes from a talk from ICHEP this summer. And you see that if you look at the cross sections for single gauge boson, top quarks, and diboson productions, they all seem to agree pretty well with the standard model predictions. So the theory is this orange band and the black is the data. They agree pretty well in many channels. But what I want to focus on this talk is this one channel where, with the experimental resolution of this screen, the error bar doesn't quite touch exactly on the one sigma one. Okay, now you're going to say one sigma. That's why I'm telling this is a fairy tale, but we'll go with it. Okay. Let me zoom in a little bit, though, because this looks a little pessimistic. So let me zoom into HCP, HCP results from CMS that they just put out a few weeks ago. This is focusing only in the W and Z sector, because if I talk about top, top is way too hard for me. It means more QCD, and I can talk to other people about that. But in single-gauge boson and double-gauge bosons, CMS seems to agree pretty well. Single-gauge bosons and gauge bosons plus jets agrees. Okay, W gamma and Z gamma, they kind of agree. WZ and ZZ for CMS agree very well. And WW and WZ agreed for CMS as well. But WW is a channel that they're very interested in because this was the 7 TeV result, and it was just on the border of the error bar. And what happened was that at 8 TeV, it became even slightly more discrepant than at 7 TeV. Okay? And now CMS blew this plot up for us so we can see it in a little bit more visual evidence. So Atlas and CMS at 7 TeV were a little bit high, and then now CMS actually is in the 2 sigma range of how they're off by. Okay, and I'll come back to exact numbers and how it agrees with the standard model later, but I just want to visually kind of present this. So if I saw this, I never see this in a search, I was interested in trying to understand, is the standard model wrong? Could there be new physics? Where do you go from this? So the other important thing to understand is if you're talking about this particular channel, the WW cross-section of the standard model, how many measurements does the LHC make of this, and are they seeing something consistent with each other? So in principle, the LHC can make 8 independent measurements of the WW cross-section. So you can look directly for the standard model WW. Okay, so that's the first thing they do. And CMS, Atlas, and CMS at 8 TeV all have measured this and all are high. And then again, ironically, the Higgs WW search, well, actually kind of by design for CMS, is also another measurement of the standard model WW production, because how you measure Higgs to WW is you separate your data into a control region and a signal region. The control region is supposed to be dominated by WW that doesn't come from Higgs, so you're making another independent measurement of the standard model WW rate, and I call it independent because the cuts between these types of searches and these types of searches are actually quite different. Okay, so you're looking at a different kinematic regime. And the amusing thing is every single reported measurement of the WW cross-section of the standard model has been high so far, all 7 of these measurements. And Atlas at 8 TeV is the only one that hasn't reported, and they haven't reported because it's high. So there's starting to definitely be a trend, but now we have to go back to the numbers and say, okay, what kind of trend do you believe? So this isn't Fermilion high, okay, as you saw this. Okay, we're not talking about a 5 or 6 sigma, but then again, it's not astrophysics either. Apologies to any astrophysics. Okay. So, yep.
The standard model is the standard model without the Higgs.
Is without the Higgs, and I'll talk about that effect as well. So the actual numbers that we can put on this and give us kind of the state of the art. So at 7 TeV, Atlas and CMS measured 53 and 52 picobar and cross sections. And NLO theory at 7 TeV was approximately 45 and 47. Okay. Now, the reason you'd say, what the heck, why does the standard model make 2 different predictions? Well, this is just 2 different ways of computing the standard model cross section. Atlas, this is what directly comes out of MC at NLO. Whereas this is the MCFM prediction by Campbell, Ellis, and Williams, the theory, the actual theory prediction, whereas Atlas did this themselves. Now, of course, you'd say, okay, this is 1.4 and 1 sigma. Is this an anomaly? No one would get excited about 1 sigma. And we see 3 sigma things and we say, ah, that's not real. I mean, so this is very, very, very low. But the amusing thing is that they both measured high, and you see that Atlas and CMS basically got the same number. Okay, so that's an interesting circumstantial fact. The other interesting thing about this is that if I had just seen these numbers and I said one sigma, well, I'd say, okay, this is just an overall scaling. What's the big deal? The other interesting thing is it's not just a rate anomaly. So they provide differential distributions. Of course, they don't actually give you a p-value based on this, but yep.
So, for example, they have like a 2-3 error of luminosity.
Yep.
Is it possible to get a sharper anomaly by taking ratio of WW to CC reduction, for example?
You can. So at CMS and ATV, they are looking at ZZ versus WW, and it comes out about 2 sigma again. The thing that you're really dominated by are the systematics. And the systematics between WW and ZZ, or just CMS actually compares WW to Z, and the systematics don't cancel, because one thing I'll talk about later is there's a jet veto uncertainty that just is there kind of always. So this isn't a rate anomaly. If you actually look at the distributions, you actually start to say, hey, maybe there's something going on. Now, this might not look like anything. This might look to some of you like a stunning confirmation of the standard model. But for other of you who look at exotic searches or SUSY searches, this is a very peculiar plot, because in exotics or SUSY searches, every single bin always matches up with the theory prediction exactly. It's really remarkable how well theory predicts the data for any search that they do. But the standard model has a lower threshold. Okay, they're not trying to find new physics, so they don't have to massage anything. And this is what you get out of Atlas at 7 TeV. And you notice an interesting effect. This isn't something where the distributions are kind of uniformly scaled off by the same amount. In fact, what happens is that in lots of distributions, at the high PT and also at the low, the tails match quite well to the standard model predictions. It's actually in the bulk of the distributions that things are off by. Okay? So this does not just look like a simple overall rescaling. It looks like some shape effect where I need to fill in certain bins preferentially and not others. So that's a suggestion that there could be something going on here. Now, the Atlas, the results I just showed you for this cross-section number and these plots, this was updated in October. We didn't rerun FIT, so I'll be talking about just the preliminary conf note. It has about the same significance as I listed on the previous transparency. The only difference between this cut and this cut is that the PT of the lepton system changed. I can talk about why, but it's basically the same thing. One interesting thing, just for anybody who cares about standard model measurements, is now you notice that they also quote 44.7. And so three different standard model cross sections at 7 TeV have been given by the experiments, 45.1, 47, and 44.7. I think this is just another emphasis that experiments need to have consensus outside of Higgs on cross sections. So the Higgs has this beautiful Higgs cross section working group, like Sally Dawson, Kirill, Melnikov, and these people are on this. And they spend all this time trying to say this is the cross section that we're going to use for the Higgs. Well, the standard model matters just as much, so it might be nice, but these are all ballpark and it doesn't really affect the significance. So at ATV, it's going the wrong way too. And there's other effects that go the wrong way too. So at ATV, this is interesting because you could have said at 7 TeV, okay, CMS and Atlas measured the same number. That was just a fluke. They're both one sigma high and they both went one sigma in the same direction. That happens all the time. However, CMS measured at 8 TeV with 3.5 inverse femtobarns, and they found that they found 69.9 picobarns with an NLO prediction of 57. So now you're off by 20% or so. And you've grown compared to the 7 TeV, you're off by about 1.8 sigma now instead of 1 sigma. And another amusing fact about this is that it grows at 8 TeV even faster than it should. So you could have said at 7 TeV, CMS just was off by some constant K factor. Okay, they did something, you just had to rescale the cross section. Well, then you should make exactly a prediction for how the new cross section should change, just with the parton luminosity as I go from a 7 TeV proton to an 8 TeV proton. And so that's done theoretically. This is how much the parton luminosity should have changed you by. It should have changed you by about 21% going from 7 to 8. But it actually increased by about 33%. So this thing's rising faster than the parton luminosity even. Okay?
But wouldn't something like a parton luminosity also affect the ZZ
Yeah.
Pretty much the same way.
Yeah, so that's another statement of, but this is also the statement of, if you had new physics at a higher threshold, you should have expected a bigger effect at 8 TeV than at 7 TeV.
Huh.
So that's an interesting clue that it could be kind of new physics. Now, you can look at the differential distributions of CMS at 8 TeV, and you can say, okay, did things change here? We're off by about 20%, 2 sigma, what happens? Well, actually, you look at their plots, and they look pretty well. I mean, it's not quite as off as Atlas looked at 7 TeV, and you see that there's pretty much, I don't know, everything's kind of uniform along here. There might be some trends in the tails, but and even this plot here, all the things match, okay, ratio of data to prediction, it's 1. But then you remember the previous slide, and I said everything's off by about 20%. So how does everything kind of look uniformly here? And then you see in tiny font, on a standard model cross-section measurement, they say data-driven normalization. This is ridiculous, okay? You're trying to measure the cross-section. You're not trying to renormalize the cross-section. So why would you do this, okay? So then you say, okay, I noticed what you did. I can take your cross-section and scale out your data-driven normalization. And this is what actually CMS's differential distributions look at 8 TeV, okay? And this certainly looks off in many distributions in a shape kind of way, not just a rescaling, which is what they did and threw it out the door. So there definitely seems to be a trend in this particular final state. Lots of independent measurements. Now the question is, what can you do with this? They're slightly different between Atlas and CMS, and that's another good point. So when Atlas and CMS measured the same number at 7 TeV and agree with one another, they actually did very different techniques for getting to that number. So again, it kind of shows that maybe this is kind of robust. They did acceptance differently between the two things, et cetera, and slightly different cuts. So it's interesting that they got the same number at 7 TeV, even though employing slightly different methods. So the question is, first off, are these a trend or are they just upward fluctuations? Okay, I think it's actually on the lines of a trend. I can say that as a theorist. And you could say it's a trend also because of the fact that you're seeing this anomaly in so many places. And in fact, the WW cross-section is the reason why Atlas completely redid their Higgs to WW analysis for HCP and couldn't combine with 7 TeV. They really don't understand exactly what's going on. So if you believe it's a trend, though, then you have this bifurcation of, is it a trend, so it's real, and is it just that the standard model calculation is wrong, or could it be new physics for the first time ever, okay, at a collider in recent memory? Yep. Yep. Now, the point, though, is, as Itai brought up, you have these same parton distribution functions that would influence the ZZ cross-section, the WZ cross-section, as well as all these multi-gauge boson processes, and all of those agree very, very well. So you need some way to say that QCD was affecting WW differently than ZZ and WZ. And every QCD person that I've talked to, Gavin Salam, Michelangelo, George Sturman, that's kind of a reason to think it's not, at least in the parton distributions, that's affecting this. There could be some subtleties, but I'll come back to this one. So right now I'm going to focus on new physics, but I'm going to then come back to it at the end talking about what could be going on with the standard model calculation, which includes PDFs. So I'm going to come back to this one. I'll return to the less travel one, at least for me. And of course, that can make all the difference. So if we want the ingredients for a BSM explanation, what we really need to do is first understand what it means to measure the WW cross-section, okay? So they don't just magically come up with something and say, hi, I'm 69 picobars. So the total cross-section that you want to measure, so you have a certain number of event selections, so that's what's going into your number of data. You say, I'm going to have this many leptons, et cetera. I just have the data. I'm going to count this. When you have your total counts, then you're going to subtract off all the backgrounds which give you the same final states that you're interested in. And then if you want to extrapolate to what the actual theory WW cross-section is, you need to divide out, well, first off, what the luminosity is. That's why you have that luminosity uncertainty. The branching fraction of W into leptons, so these are very well known. And then you have these two factors. So CWW really is essentially a detector effect sort of thing, where the detector, you're only counting events within a fiducial region, so you want to match the number of events you see in that fiducial region to what your simulation shows. So that's what this CWW effect is. And this AWW effect is just the geometric acceptance of your fiducial region. This cross-section for WW that the theorists calculate don't have any cuts on eta or anything like that, so you want to extrapolate what the rest of the contribution is that you're missing outside the fiducial region. A is just geometry from going from the fiducial region to the whole rapidity, and CWW is the efficiency mismatch in the fiducial region only. So you could call it fiducial cross-section, which would be just taking out this AWW effect and putting a sigma WW fiducial in there. So in the standard model, there's three main contributions. Okay, ignore this, what's called TGC vertex. Just assume that's the standard model vertex. So you have a T-channel process, which dominates. You have an S-channel. And then you have a glue to WW through a box, which is on the level of 2 to 4%. So what you're doing is you'd like to measure these things, and you could do this a number of different ways, because W's decay in different ways. You can have additional jets on them as well. The way that the experiments have decided to do this is they want to look in the most clean state they can possibly come up with. So they're going to do basically a counting experiment. They're going to demand that both W's decay leptonically, so you'll have opposite sign dileptons. You'll have missing energy as well, because you have the neutrinos. And you'll have your fiducial region where you can actually find your opposite sign leptons. And they really want to try to make this look as clean as possible. So both experiments also include a jet veto. So they can't have any additional jets above order 25 GeV or so. There's a few other requirements, but this is basically what you're doing. It's a counting experiment of same sign, of opposite sign dileptons and missing energy and a jet veto. So what you'd like to do then is look for something that just is opposite sign leptons and METs. You need nothing else, because if you have, for instance, like this was some sort of decay down, you'd get extra jets and things like that. You really need just opposite sign leptons and METs. So, well, this is schematically. So they have the NLO corrections for these two diagrams, so that's included in the calculation. So it's NLO for these, and then formally this is higher than NLO because it's glue through a box. But yeah, this is schematically, and then the state of the art is that these are at NLO, and then this is at this particular order, which is NNLO formally. So you need, if you want to come up with a new physics explanation, opposite sign leptons and MET and nothing else. Okay, so one way to do this would be you could have just something that made additional WWs. Okay, but none of this implies that there has to be real Ws anywhere in this final state. Okay, this would just be a simple way to do it, but it doesn't hurt if there are either, because again, I'm talking about a one or two sigma discrepancy. I'm not trying to explain something coming out of the tails here. I'm just trying to influence the bulk of the distribution. The tails look quite standard model-like, so we'd like to figure out if there's any way to do that. So the experimentalist favorite tool that they can come up with, and what they actually use to do these things, is to try to bound if you have some new contribution of triple gauge boson couplings. Okay, and both the Atlas and CMS papers actually set bounds on triple gauge boson couplings. And this doesn't work at all, okay, and you can actually set quite strong bounds on triple gauge boson couplings, because you need to affect the bulk of the distribution, not the tails of these distributions. And the models that they put in for triple gauge boson couplings always affect the tails. So you want similar kinematics to WWs, two leptons and MET, and you need a cross-section, let's say, of order a few picobarns, because that was the difference I was talking about on all these sorts of measurements. So what does all this and more? Okay, electroweak gauge genos. So, why am I talking about electroweak gauge genos? Isn't supersymmetry dead or in the hospital or something like this? This is the amusing furor that started with the BBC article. In particular, when there's this Chris Parks quote, supersymmetry may not be dead, but these latest results have certainly put into the hospital. And then you say, okay, well, the BBC is wrong on lots of things, and then you have Matt Strassler, right? Why theories don't go into hospitals. And then being myself, you can ignore all this because I'm not trying to do this, but you have Matt Strassler to answer these questions. So What exactly am I talking about for electric gauge ENOs? So supersymmetry, and since there aren't experimentalists in the room, I don't need to go through this slide in any detail, but it's a symmetry that we add partners for everything. And this goes along with Shelley Glashow's derisive comment that supersymmetry is great. We found half the particles. Well, unfortunately, that comment's actually been worse. We found almost half the particles because Susie has extra Higgses, and we didn't find all the standard Higgses yet. So what are the bounds on these particles, though? You constantly hear supersymmetry is dead or these articles like this. So there's two different types of particles we need to focus on for bounds. So we have things that are charged under SU3, so under the color groups, our squarks as well as our gluino. And then you have the rest of the supersymmetric partners, these guys and the Higgsinos. And these are charged under electroweak gauge groups only, so they don't have nearly as strong of couplings, and you don't get to produce them through gluons. So what are the bounds on them? So if we look at SUSY pre the LHC, okay, and by supersymmetry I'm meaning an additional missing energy as well, so you have some dark matter candidate or some lightest neutral thing. And these are the bounds pre-LHC, okay? So the Tevatron and all their inspired glory after many years set bounds on colored supersymmetric particles that were about 300 GeV. And for electroweak states, unfortunately, as I said, the Tevatron didn't do anything compared to LEP, basically. Electroweak states here about 100 GeV. Now, what did the LHC do, okay? Why are there all these new articles? Well, what the LHC did was it changed one number so far. The 300 GeV went into a TeV, roughly. Okay, so colored states have to be very heavy. But interestingly enough, these states here, these electroweak states that you can only produce through electroweak gauge processes, they're just starting to enter this game. Okay, so the 100 GeV scale is still fair game. Amusingly, this will be very interesting. So there have been advances in this that I'll talk about in a bit. But this scale is still available to you. So what I want to focus on in this talk for the next little bit of it is I want to focus on these partners of the W and Z gauge bosons. Okay, so we're talking about a discrepancy in W's. Well, let's look at what can happen there. And I'll also talk about the partners of the photon and the Higgs as well. So the electroweak gaugeino sector. So this would be an example topology that would do exactly what you want. Okay. If instead of producing W's, we produce the W partners, okay, the so-called chargeinos. So imagine pair-producing chargeinos, and this chargeino then can decay down to the lightest neutralino. And if this is the partner of the W, the way it likes to do that is it likes to emit a W gauge boson. Okay? So the process in mind that you'd have would be just two W's plus two neutralinos, which would be WW plus missing energy. Okay? Everything else is decoupled. This is just kind of an example topology. Now, what else does this? If you hate supersymmetry, okay, I have nothing against you. Call it a heavy lepton if you want, okay? You have some new charge state produced through Drellian. It likes to decay to W in some of its own neutrino. Okay, I'm not saying one's better than the other, but this is just a topology, okay? WW plus missing energy. Now, there are lots of other options for doing this. I'll come back to this later. You don't have to have real W's the whole way around, as I said. You could have something where, for instance, you produce chargeino neutralino, you got a real W this way, your L nu, and then the neutralino. And then your neutralino that you produce and associate, let's call this neutralino 2, and this is neutralino 1. I didn't draw my iPad because it's too small. You decay to a slepton. This slepton, if there's a mass degeneracy here, this could be soft. And you can get a real lepton and missing energy. So this is just another example of it doesn't have to be real W's. Yep.
Does the WZ measurement use missing energy?
The WZ measurement does not require, well, it has a low cut on the mat, but it doesn't have an upper cut. So it is affected by
these.
This.
You would also like
yeah, I'm gonna
expect the
okay. WZ cut. Yeah. So SUSY has other options, but let's try to just take this kind of simplest onsets that we can and see where we get with it for the experiments. So a toy spectrum we could do with gravity-mediated supersymmetry breaking is we could do it where we just put the chargeinos at literally the lightest they can be. We put them right at the LEP limit, okay, which is order 100 GeV, and we stick the beano at a order GeV so we can make real W's in this cascade down. And amusingly, this is exactly the right point to affect the cross-section significantly, because if you stick charginos and neutralinos at order 100 GeV, the cross-sections we're talking about are order 5 to 10 picobarns, which remarkably are exactly the anomaly that we're trying to explain. So this could be a simple ansatz for it. And then you'd have two topologies. You'd have, you pair produce these other W partners, where then you get WW plus missing energy. Or you can produce, just like you have both WW and WZ production, you can produce WZ partners, where you then decay down to a WZ and missing energy as well. Okay? So naively, in any model you can construct, I mean, if you want to make an extra gauge group or something like this, you're always going to make WW and WZ. Now, I think the interesting thing that came out is that this process at these kinds of cross-sections are no longer allowed, okay? And I'll claim that this is a tie for the second most interesting result of the entire LHC for this summer. First most was the Higgs, and then second most tied is the direct stops from ATLAS, and then this as well. That's what I claim is the most interesting from this summer.
But generically, this is actually dominant, right?
This actually by a factor of a 2, yeah. And so now we have to go and say, well, what's going on there?
Is that true for any
No, no. If I squeeze out these things entirely, then no. But generically, though, if I only make them a little bit off shell, the bounds are just as strong. It's only if I go to the extreme limit of losing things that it goes away. So let's look at these particular bounds. So the WZ final state is now ruled out well above the LEP limit. So this, if you forget everything else in my talk, this is the thing to remember from this kind of summerish to fall, is that now for the first time ever, a hadron collider is pushing past LEP. So it's very interesting. And the WZ final state, so what this is a plot from CMS, ATLAS had a similar effect. They look at exactly the state of the topology I was talking about, where you make WZ plus missing energy. And you see, they've gone well beyond LEP. LEP was at 100 GeV. Now, using this final state, WZ, they pushed almost to 250 GeV. Okay, so a major step forward.
So which one is actually stronger, the trilepton or the...
The trilepton, yeah, you don't get all the way up if you don't use the 2L2J. They kind of fill in different regions. You have more low, and then the trilepton is this pink one that goes here. So the trilepton is a low mass. It rolls up to about 190 or so. If you use the digets as well, it pulls up here. But an interesting fact is that you see the final states they use are trilepton and then 2L2J. So they're really using WZ where the Z goes leptonically. So this still doesn't say anything about WW. It really is WZ that you're talking about. Amusingly, the experimentalists didn't do this because I don't know why, but myself and collaborators, we actually are able to say that naively you could have said, well, what if I say forget the WZ final state, and let's make this more like a partner of a Higgs, and then make it a WH final state, and go all the way to WH instead of all the way to WZ. Well, what we did is we took, they don't have any search for this WH final state as a BSM search, but we took the WH search that ATLAS did in Higgs to BB, and you actually can show that the ATLAS 70 EV search can roll out Higgsino up to about 160 GeV. So also in the Higgs direction, you're ruled out basically the same out because there's a slight cross-section difference between a Wino and a Higgsino. And if you normalize by that, you're basically at the same point. So WH and WZ are just gone. Okay, you can't have them all the way down at 100 GeV any longer. Now, you could say, and so as again, this is ours, not ATLAS. And well, there aren't experimentalists here, so I won't make a pitch that they have to do this. But I don't think any theorist can do this any longer because this was the only cut and count based search for WH I ever saw. Everything else is boosted decision trees and whatnot, so we can't implement them without more information. So are there ways out? Can you affect WW without affecting WZ and things like this? Okay. So there are. A simple example is a gauge-mediated scenario where you have a Chargino NLSP. Okay? And I'll talk you through that in just 1 second. There's also gravity-mediated setups with sleptons, that one Feynman diagram I showed earlier, but I won't be showing plots from that in this talk. So I'll just focus on this Chargino NLSP case. So the idea is that what makes up the Chargino can be some admixture of the W's and the Higgs's, And as well, you have this all mixture of the neutralinos that are mixed up of the W partner, of the Z partners, and the Higgses and the Binos. And there's a region in the supersymmetric parameter space where you get a low tan beta and large Wino-Higgsino mixing. And what happens there is normally if you have a triplet of SU2, the charge states are heavier than the neutral states. Okay, you have an electromagnetic splitting where the charge goes heavier. But when you're mixing a lot of the states together, you can actually look to a certain regime where the charge state actually falls under the neutral state. Okay, so the charge state becomes the lightest. And this is a so-called Chargino-NLSP region, where what happens there is, so the Charginos, they're the lightest, they immediately decay to a W and a Gravitino, since we're talking about gauge mediation here. And then in the case of the dangerous states where you have Chargino-Neutralino-associated production, normally this neutralino would like to decay to a Z Gravitino or a Higgs Gravitino, but what happens is it decays to an highly off-shell W star Chargino, and then the Chargino, since it's at the bottom, decays to an on-shell W Gravitino. So what's happened is we've gone just to a particular example of masses, and we've entirely eliminated the WZ and the WH final states. Now we're only talking about WW final states, and really WW and WWW star, but this thing is so off-shell it doesn't matter for all intents and purposes. So here's an example spectrum. So Chargino is at about 110, the lightest neutralino 113, and the NLO CZ cross section is about 4.3 picobarns. So everything's right in the ballpark. So you could say, okay, this is the right number for the cross section, but does it just destroy the differential distributions? Okay, what happens when we actually look at this differentially? In ATLAS at 7TV, this was remarkable when we made the first plots. We hadn't designed it to be this way. But what happens is that if I compare it to the chi-squared of the standard model, it cuts the chi-squared by a factor of 2. Okay? We're not talking about new physics doing a little small perturbation. It cuts it by a factor of 2. And the reason why is, let me go through the colors here. So the black, of course, is the data points. The pale color here is the standard model prediction, okay, including the backgrounds. The orange, as Etter brought up, is the Higgs to WW contribution using the appropriate cross-section from the Higgs standard model working group. And you see that the Higgs influences things here by a little bit, but it's pretty marginal, the effect of the Higgs at 7TeV. And the red contribution is the effect of the electroweak enos. Now, what's remarkable about this is the fact that the electroweak enos, this new physics contributions, does not just destroy all the tails of our distributions. Almost magically, it is preferentially filling in exactly the bins that had the largest discrepancies with the standard model and not affecting the bins that agreed very well with the standard model. So that's why we can literally have the chi-square. Okay, this is a huge effect if I look at the shape effects here. And you can see it is when we break out these initial final, if I look at the electroweak contribution, this red line here, it just has a very different shape than the standard model. Okay, it likes to populate in slightly different places when the standard model does, and magically it fits the data. Okay, so the chi-square is cut in half. Now you could say CMS, okay, does this happen to AATV as well? So CMS, like as I said, when you back out the data-driven normalization and you actually look at a bin-by-bin kind of chi-squared or p-value, the standard model doesn't fit well at all. Okay, the p-value is 10 to the minus 3, so you're basically almost excluding the standard model with their measurement within another sigma. If you include the Higgs, the p-value jumps, okay, to 0.1. Okay, so the Higgs at ATV makes a bigger contribution. The colors are the same. The Higgs is this orange bit here, here, and down here. But, okay, it does a little bit. But if I ignore the Higgs and do standard model plus Charginos, I get a better hit than comparing the Higgs alone. And then you get a very beautiful fit if you include standard model Higgs and the Charginos as they all come together. And now the p-value jumps up to 0.75. You're actually matching the data very, very well compared to this horrible p-value that you started with the standard model alone. So this could have all died again. At 8TV, I could have gone and done these distributions. I could have been affecting the tails or something more. But magically, all of it seems to agree very well. So what are the constraints on this scenario? So I can't just come up with new physics that only does one thing. You have to have some way to test this thing. The biggest constraints in this scenario are, first off, same sign day leptons. So if I go back to the topology here, so I got rid of WZ by going to this diagram. But the problem is I got rid of WZ by adding an extra W on this side here. So 50% of the time, this W will have the same sign as this W, so I'm basically making same sign W production. Okay? Also, in these sort of shape effects here, I said in the differential distributions that Atlas and CMS measured, they all agreed very well on the tails, but that was the distributions they chose to look at. If you look at more sensitive variables, like some of these MT2 and higher versions of MT2, you could see shape differences, but they just weren't available as of yet. So these are the two biggest bounds that you should look for, same sign dileptons and opposite sign dileptons if you look a little bit more at the shape differences. And as an example, so HCP, as of iCHEP, everything worked perfectly well. Okay, so that's what was their major update in August. We had to get rid of WZ and we had to redo the fits. But if you look at HCP, they've also, for the first time, this opposite sign dileptons. Amusingly, HCP has put bounds on direct slepton production for the first time ever. Okay, this is with about 9 inverse femtobarn of data. So it's really remarkable. So now direct sleptons, which we normally think of, hey, I can't find these. These are things are too weakly coupled. They're just a scalar. Now you can rule out sleptons up to almost 300 GeV. But the amusing thing also with these opposite sign dileptons is that as you go to the lower edge, where we want to live, to make the cross-section difference, you run out of the bound at around 110 GeV. Okay? And this is precisely because the backgrounds, you're running into WW more and more. Okay? And how you distinguish signal from background becomes hard, and you just can't set bounds here. So opposite sign dileptons aren't, I think, a problem for us as of now. Same sign dileptons are very interesting, and I can talk more about these offline, but I don't trust their same sign measurement because they've already excluded the standard model at 2 sigma based on their same sign. They either had a huge downwards fluctuation or something's going on weird with their backgrounds. So these are the ways you can test this, and in principle, by the end of the using analysis for the full ATEV run, you'll be able to see it. So are there other effects for this new physics scenario I said? Okay, so these are two places you could really look. Yeah, it was useless. I mean, we just slide by.
Okay.
Yeah. The trileptons provide no bound on us because our third lepton is just so soft. Yeah. So where else would you see this popping up? So you might say, okay, I'm making WW, so this should drastically affect Higgs to WW, which is one of the bread and butter Higgs signals that we're looking for, WW, ZZ, gamma, gamma. Amusingly, this will not affect Higgs to WW sensitivity. Okay. The reason for this is because, as I said at the very beginning of the talk, all the Higgs searches for WW, since they're not looking for like some nice mass peak, they're really just trying to count. They have a control region and a signal region. Now, if you affected the control region and signal region very differently with your new physics, then you could make a big effect on Higgs to WW. And in fact, Dieter Zeppenfeld et al., back in May or so, tried to come up with ways that you could affect control and signal regions very differently and affect Higgs to WW sensitivity. But typically what happens is when you affect the control and signal by a lot, you're immediately dead by multi-lepton measurements or other things. In fact, Dieter's papers are ruled out now at like 10 sigma. But the interesting effect for us is that we don't have a big difference between signal and control. Our shapes look similar in these things. As I said, we affect the bulk, not the tails. But it will show up in the control region in the sense that if they measure the control region, they should have more events in the control region than they expect. This doesn't affect their sensitivity because their sensitivity estimates are based on normalized in the control regions, but it will show up as an upscaling in the control regions, and all 4 experiments, both Atlas and CMS at 7TeV and both Atlas and CMS at 8TeV, all had to upscale their control region for WW. Okay.
So why do you say it won't affect their needs? Because they take this upscale and then they extrapolate.
And then they extrapolate into the control. So, into the signal, yes. And so the predictions for how sensitive they should have been, like when you look at observed versus expected, your expected was based already on that upscaling.
Right.
So.
But that would have to mean that your new signal is affecting control and signal.
In the same way, exactly.
Okay.
That's, yeah, sorry. An amusing effect of having charginas this light, and this particular admixture of charginas we did, was the fact that Higgs to gamma-gamma increases by about 15%, okay? Now, if you like gamma-gamma high, okay, it's not 75%, I can't do that for you. You have to talk to Carlos and do weird things. But you get a little bit of a bump, which might be eventually interesting if it doesn't go all the way back to the standard model. As I said, same sign, dileptons, should, by the end of ATV, should confirm rule this out, or there's other transverse variables that in principle can separate this. Okay, so this is the new physics pitch. And now in the last couple minutes, let me just talk briefly about other possibilities. Okay, could this whole thing just be the standard model? So there's essentially three places that you could get things wrong. So the backgrounds could be wrong. Okay, so we're not just measuring standard model WW, we're not just measuring the PDFs that go into standard model W. There's actually genuine other backgrounds. Top, for instance, makes WW and has additional jets. So there's some contamination from Top. There's some contamination from Drellian, et cetera. So the backgrounds could be wrong. An interesting effect here, though, is that, well, all of these backgrounds seem to be pretty well understood. And as I showed you, all the other cross sections seem to fit very well. And these backgrounds also contribute there. So it's not like you just have one independent measurement of these backgrounds. And it's also very small numerically if you got these backgrounds off. When we're talking about the significance of the WW cross section, so normally we're talking about like the Higgs, we talk about like five sigma. Man, we've seen the Higgs. Their significance for finding standard model WW, we're talking about like 35 sigma here. Okay, so the S over B is really good. So messing up B by a little is not quite enough. You need to be off by, again, as I said, 20%. These are huge discrepancies, at least CMS has at ATV. So this one I don't think is probably the dominant contribution here. The WW cross-section could simply be wrong. I say, hey, there's a 20% effect. Well, maybe at next to next to leading order, I could just be off and this 20% could come in. Now, if we look from leading order to next to leading order, the K factors that we're talking about at both 7 and ATV are about a factor of 1.6, okay? Now, since I'm not an expert on this, what I did was I went and talked to Gavin Salam at CERN, since he's the expert on crazy K factors in weird places. And talking to Gavin and George Sturman and others, they say that when you're talking about K factors at this kind of ratio for next to leading order, they might buy a 10% effect going to next to, but 20% seems to be too much just to do it purely based on saying I have the overall rate wrong. Okay. Other interesting facts about the WW cross-section. The Higgs actually interferes destructively with standard model WW. Okay? So I said we didn't include the Higgs contribution, but if you do include the Higgs contribution properly, Ellis, Campbell, Williams, showed that you actually destructively interfere, so it goes in the wrong direction, makes the cross-section smaller. Now, the Higgs wasn't a big effect to start with. By definition, when you're adding it that way, I'm only adding it, ignoring interference, and that's what the experimentalists do. But they should be doing it properly, and it destructively interferes. So we did the simplest thing that they do, which is just add it on as well.
But then your 0.75 p-value doesn't.
Yeah, but also the dominant contribution was the charginess. The 0.1 p-value wasn't right. It's really the thing.
But sorry, are you saying, I mean, presumably the interference effect is small compared to the, or are you actually saying that the net contribution of the Higgs?
The net contribution of the Higgs is a maximum of what I showed you on that slide, is what I'm saying.
Right, but the destructive interference, how much roughly would that change?
So yeah, I mean, we're talking about a less than 10% effect on the total, so now we're talking, let's call it 7 or 6% instead of 10%. So
okay.
It's almost, this is just gonna be a list of things that all could have been an effect, but even if they are, they go in the wrong direction, which is
ironic. Yeah, I was trying to understand how big the...
Yeah, it's a small effect. This summer, for the first time ever, a German group computed the next to leading order electroweak contributions to WW. So normally it's just the QCD next to leading order better calculated. This also is actually a negative effect on the total cross-section. Okay? So it decreases the cross-section instead of increasing the cross-section. So all of these kind of things, QCD, people say, probably doesn't go high enough. Okay, this and the electroweak sector all tends to make it go down, not up. Okay, if you include these effects, better. The last place it could be is in that kind of formula for measuring the total cross-sections. I have this efficiency and acceptance factor as well, okay, because I'm not going to buy the branching fractions off. There are various things that go into these things, such as that there's a jet veto. Okay, so the jet veto says, if I have jets above 25 GeV, I don't include them in my measurement. Okay, if they're below 25 GeV, I count them in my WW. So what would have to happen to have a bigger measured cross-section is I'd have to have more events coming through than I expected, okay? So that means I have to have more events passing the jet veto than I calculate in the standard model. What that means is if I take, for instance, the PD distribution of jets, what happens is that the jet distribution has to go softer rather than harder, okay? And naively, again, talking to QCD experts, and they at least don't yell at me for this explanation, is if I take something that's purely an electroweak final state and I add one jet to that, what tends to happen, because I want to smooth out the kind of singularities at low PT, the whole spectrum tends to like to shift to higher PT. So the behavior of QCD naively in other channels that we have examples of goes in the wrong direction. This would shift it to jets being at higher PT if I went to a next leading order here for the shape. And what I need is that the jets need to actually come into lower PT to explain the discrepancy. So these are all kind of possibilities, but all of them seem to go possibly in the wrong way as well. So what is the state of the art, and what can we go from here for the WW, if you want to believe the standard model explanation? Right now, as I said, the state of the art is the next to leading order QCD prediction plus the parton shower. And the question is, what's the variation on this? And actually, it appears that there can be quite a lot of variation, since, as I said, Atlas changed their entire Higgs to WW study between 7 and 8 TV. They used to use Pauhegg and Pithy 8, and they used to use MC8 and LO Herwig, and now they're shifting to Pauhegg, Pithy 8. And in fact, from your local institution, Bob Holdham looked at this, and he did a theorist Monte Carlo scan, varying Herwig and MC8 and LO, and you see that there can be quite a bit of a difference between switching from generator to generator. Of course, this is just a pure generator level study, and you can take these curves as you will. Interestingly enough, talking to the Higgs to WW people at CERN for Atlas, they made this switch because this was just so far off for them. They went to this, but now the jet multiplicity is all off for them. So it really theoretically is not well under control. So the question is, what can you do? How much does this matter? Well, an interesting fact is that Atlas and CMS, as I said, got the same cross-section at 7 TeV. Okay? Could have been a fluke. But interestingly, they used totally different ways to get their acceptances. Okay? Atlas used MCN and LO at 7 TeV, whereas CMS used MagRef. Okay? So CMS gets their acceptance at tree level. Atlas gets their acceptance at NLO. But magically, they both got the exact same number for the cross-section. So maybe this part of the acceptance doesn't particularly matter too much. So we'd like to have some more reliable theory systematic estimate, though, on this whole procedure. So there's two places that you could go for an advancement. You could either calculate the next to leading order cross-section for WW. It's been calculated for Higgs. So in principle, they can calculate it for WW. Okay. In fact, Grazzini and collaborators are working on this. But as the experimentalists say, who knows when this will actually be done, because they've been asking for years. The other possibility that is slightly more tractable is you could look at a resum calculation. Okay, instead of going to NNLO, you could do NLO plus NLL and NNLL. So this is the avenue that we're starting to look at Stony Brook and at BNL. So how do we go further? So we have QCD, okay? And you'd say, okay, well, QCD is this beautiful theory. It agrees very well with lots of things. And QCD kind of looks like this masterpiece that we have. So QCD is the Mona Lisa. Now, the question, though, is QCD, what we call QCD experimentally, though, is built up of a bunch of different little pieces, okay? So the Monte Carlos are what's always used in the end of the day, okay, to compare with the results. There's also the people that compute at higher order, higher fixed orders in QCD. Okay, they're their own special group that resides mostly in Europe. Then there's also the resummation people that compute all the resumming all the large logs. Okay, those are those people there. And then there's also the newcomers of the game, the SKEP people, the effective field theory community of having to do this, okay? Ironically, only the Monte Carlo people actually matter to the experimentalists, and the question is how to tie these things into it. And the question is, when you bring all these communities together, does the Mona Lisa, when you kind of zoom in on this, is it made up of a bunch of like sub-individual masterpieces? So it's like, is resummation a masterpiece to itself just like Monte Carlo's? Or is the Mona Lisa actually made up of a bunch of old magazine covers, okay, that nobody reads and nobody knows what the hell went into the calculations, okay? So the question is, how do we bridge this gap? And I think the most useful and quickest way to get some handle on this is the resummation direction, because these techniques for resummation have been developed for the Higgs. They've been developed for Z cross sections as well, and it's almost a plug and chug. So we're working on this currently, and who knows whether we can just give a theory estimate or whether experimentalists might use it for weighting, but this is one direction that we're going in, and hopefully this spring we'll have something to say. So conclusions. I think the WWE cross section is definitely showing a trend, okay? At least it's showing a trend enough that the experimentalists are very worried. They're starting to redo things. They're starting to try to get better handles on this. So I do not think it's a fluctuation, okay? But then you can go from this two things. New physics, as I've given you an example of, can fit this better than the standard model. It's the one place ever I found where new physics fits better than the standard model alone. And as I, that's the title of this talk. New physics could be in plain sight. It just happened to be in a region that you have to look for it carefully. So take this away, and if you want to, unfortunately or fortunately, this has now reached the blogosphere with Adam Falkowski's blog as of Monday. So this has been pointed out. And if you don't believe Adam Falkowski, Michelangelo Mangano at the HCP summary listed this as one of the three places that the standard model doesn't work. WW digests at high changes in rapidity, and TT bar asymmetry. So this is definitely starting to be something weird, and I've given you an example where new physics can fit it. Standard model calculations should be improved, but regardless of all this, whether it's standard model or new physics, if it's not a fluctuation, this is a really important channel, and we need to understand it because it has ramifications all over the place. First off, just for Higgs to WW, okay? You want to say you measured Higgs to WW? How can you say that you measure that to a certain rate if you don't even know what the standard model contribution or shape really looks like? And of course, anytime where we talk about searches, searches are always looking in the low-hanging fruit. They're looking at leptons. Well, if we have the lepton cross-section wrong, that also has implications for searches as well. So, thanks. Well, yeah, it really is the fact of the kinematics. If you had just charginos, like let's say you put charginos at 200 GeV or something, and then you just kept the bottom of the spectrum at 0 GeV, then your characteristic gap would be, you fit a W in there, and then you have about 100 GeV of extra missing energy to be carried off. So what we did is we wanted the biggest contribution, so we brought them all the way down to the left limit of 100 GeV. Then you're really making Ws, but not putting off too much momentum into the neutralino. And we didn't do that by design to match the kinematics. We did it to get a cross-section big enough, but it does the same thing. So it affects kind of the bulks of distributions rather than tails. As the actual slight difference, there are slight differences in the shape, like the WW distributions are shifted off by a bit, but that was just an accident that it fit the right part of the bulk distributions. It could have also shifted off by a bit and screwed up all the bins, but it went in the right place, magically.
So how far away from 100 GeV do you have to go in order for the iceberg
Well, it's going to go very fast because the cross section of this was about 4.7 picobarns, okay, and the discrepancy you're talking about is order, let's say, 10 picobarns at most. So the cross section is drastically falling because of the PDFs. So, like, if you put it to like 150, 160 GeV, like I said, to not avoid like the WH or something, you have no effect any longer. So it's not that it makes the chi-square bad, it just it returns the standard model very fast.
Is it dangerous to base hopes on the 1-2 sigma effect?
Of course, but this is the question of whether it's a 1 or 2 sigma fluctuation or whether there is a standard model systematic that we don't know or new physics. As I said, I'm not saying it's definitely new physics. I'm also exploring the standard model route. But I think in this case, this 1 or 2 sigma, you've done it over so many measurements and shown these measurements are consistent with one another, it's at least worth taking a closer look at this channel.
There was 1 sigma fluctuation.
Yeah, of course. Like as I said, this isn't like a 5 sigma thing. This isn't even 3 sigma. But if I combine these channels naively, okay, it's 3 sigma between Atlas and CMS. And then if I do the Higgs as well, I'm sure I can do it. And as I said, if I just take the p-value, the experimentalists are covering over the fact that this is just an overall rate by just reporting one number. If you look at the p-value for their distribution, it's 10 to the minus 3. So they're ruled out on the level of 2 to 3 sigma already. So this is just kind of the clarion call to say WW needs to be explored by experimentalists, QCD theorists, and the crazy BSN people like myself.
Signal strength is the torque production cross section times the branching ratio.
Mm-hmm.
So how does this affect pick such?
So
the WW channel.
Yeah, so as I said, for Higgs searches, our particular stuff does not affect it very much at all because the control and the signal region essentially are populated almost the same. The Higgs searches, they're not really looking at the bulk of the WW distribution. By definition, they're looking kind of, the signal region is the tail of the WW distribution. And it turns out that the way the Higgs control regions are done is they're looking in a different region than the plots I showed you. And if you kind of scale that part here, it's just an overall rescaling out here. I guess I'm mucking it up like Azitai said again. But the control and the signal regions are populated in the same way by our new physics. So our new physics explanation doesn't affect the sensitivities by a lot. Okay? It would affect, if you were trying to say, let's call the overall amount of Higgs WW, it would affect that. Because you'd be subtracting out too much. But and as far as if you looked at an observer's and expected curve, you wouldn't see anything.
By the way,
yeah.
So for the TBC, the triple
gauge boson coupling.
There's one thing that makes sense to me. If you flip the diagram around, how can you have your physics there when you don't see anything you look down to the scene?
Yeah, I mean the triple gauge boson coupling searches are dubious at best, I'd say, in terms of their simplified models. Yeah.
And for the end and the low corrections, is the idea here that somehow the corrections to the ZC or WC are not as severe as they are in WW?
Well, in the NLO for all the electroweak, if you take out the Higgs, I think it's, I don't know if ZZ has been done at NNLO. I know for WZ it's not at NNLO. I mean, this is basically one thing the experimentalists have asking them to put in resbos. They just need it for dibosons. But this entire thing, I mean, this is, again, all of these are circumstantial pieces of evidence. But the starting point also is, how on earth can you affect WW and not mess up WZ and ZZ? From the QCD point of view, if you think this is the standard model causing it, you can't explain it, okay? QCD treats the short hard process, okay, independently from all the soft stuff, which is messing these distributions up. And for WZ and ZZ and WW, it's identical.
WZ, I said gamma, different channel exchanges.
But the point is, if you take the hard function versus the soft function, all the resummation effects are universal. So for
electroweak symmetry is a symmetry.
So that's the beauty of, for instance, I can take Sturman papers on resummation from the 90s or early 2000s when they did it for other channels, and I can basically just plug in the WW cross section and do the resummation very quickly. And you see it doesn't matter on the actual hard function, it just matters on the soft function part, which is really shaping some of these distributions. Now, again, I get these same effects then showing up in these other channels, but we're doing this just to say, what's the theory uncertainty? Because nobody's ever done it before.
Is it possible that the ZZ is actually discrepant, but somehow it can fit to the data?
The ZZ, I'll say anything's possible. I mean, Atlas has a slight anomaly in ZZ, but CMS is dead on. So, yeah, I don't know. I haven't looked into that as much. From my perspective, though, at least from the new physics perspective, it's very hard to get ZZ without other things.
Well, maybe just WZ, because WZ.
Yeah. Yeah. One interesting thing is when we did this study, so we had done the exclusion on opposite side. The one where we exclude the WZ final state. This is at the low region. It's based on trileptons. And the Atlas search has to be normalized by 25% upwards for WZ. They don't say where this comes from, although they do say when doing their exclusion, they do properly take into account signal contamination in the control region. But there looks like there could be a WZ upscaling. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be great if all of them were off, then you could say QCD looks like a plausible thing, but there's at least enough.
Well, I was actually optimistic that, I mean,
that
you know,
you could have new physics there.
Well, for WZ, it's, you know, as you pointed out, it is that rate is actually 2 times larger than the W in general.
Yeah.
You actually have to do this inversion of the Turkey, you know,
to get it right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, honestly, these are things that we want to come back to more carefully now. We just basically came out with something that still avoids their things and does everything we like. But our original paper also cut the chi-square and everything like that for WW. So.
More than most of them.
Yeah.
So what are the distributions that most separate out your incoming signals? I mean, not of the ones they plotted, but of the ones that you could plot.
I mean, and MT2 distribution really kind of separates out the edge effect. Because, I mean, you really do have a difference,
right?
Because you have this massless gravitino, you have about a 25 GeV shift compared to the standard model W. If you look at a tail there, you can see it. But this one plot shows how hard it is to kind of do that tail search, because this exactly, this is MCT2, another variant on MT2, but it peters out down here. So you really hit kind of the resolution of what you understand.
Is that normally you have consistent with the bound heavy Higgs?
Yeah, we actually use some of the heavy Higgs searches that check.
But also, it seems like contributions to beta and gamma.
Yeah, beta and gamma is perfectly fine because we're in the decoupling limit for the Higgs sector.
What were you going to say about same time?
Yeah, so same sign, it's definitely a worry for us right now, but same sign dileptons, the measured, so they have like 4 bins that CMS put out from 9 Emerson-Senta barns, and 2 of the bins, standard model prediction compared to what they observed, the observed was 2 sigma low compared to the standard model. So obviously when we add in same sign, that's death for us real fast. But then the 2 sigma fluctuation down and some of their numbers we really don't agree with whatsoever. Like, we actually predict like twice as much WZ as they claim. So the standard model will be rolled out at like 4 sigma. So we're still trying to get in touch with CMS and understand what exactly they did, because they provide no details, basically.
You guys know when the Atlas results?
The Atlas result, unfortunately, the one I know coming out, the thing you need also is you don't want a high HT cut on it, which normally these same signs have done. And they chronically have that problem.
Are you using PGS to do your?
No, we have a parameterized acceptance and efficiency based on the curves that they use for, that they release for the various studies, kind of cobbled together. But we match their back, in the studies I presented, we match everything very well.
Okay, well, Patrick's gonna be here for another 1.5 hours, so. Once again.